Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. Thanks, Rob. All right. We got a big show tonight. Adam Hoge coming up at 9 o'clock. We'll talk about what the Bears are going to do with their head coaching search. And also, beyond that, I mean, because that's a big story. And I want to talk about that because that's important. But there are a lot of other things that need to be fixed with the Chicago Bears and what we saw. And as the pursuit of finding a new coach is underway, what else do we have to be thinking about as fans? How close are the Chicago Bears to being a playoff contender? We'll talk about that coming up at 9 o'clock hour. And, of course, Greg Flamm of the Swap Meet moving to Thursday night. He's on tonight, 10 o'clock, 312-981-7200. One of my favorite segments, Wednesday night staple, has now a Thursday night dynamo. It hasn't even started yet, and I'm calling it a dynamo. And I just think of all the Thursday night listeners who have been deprived of this Wednesday night fun. And now you can have it. The Wednesday night fans still just come, they just stay. Good 24 hours, and they're back for the Thursday night thing. So, well, it's time for another visit from our resident philosopher, Professor Al Genie. He joins us from time to time to talk about the big picture. Last time we talked about how the pursuit of happiness is actually making us unhappy. See the news today about social media doing the exact same thing. And before that, we talked about the seven deadly sins and how to balance those sins versus the lives we actually have to live. You can find out those conversations all at our website, WGNradio.com. You can search Al Genie. Tonight, let's talk satire. This past year was ripe for political satire, as we saw some performers excel at pointing out the foibles of the Trump administration. But we also saw backlash as more and more comedians turned into political commentators to take umbrage to some of the things that are happening in this political climate. But as many categorize comedy and satire into partisan politics, Al does the work. He looks back throughout human history to see how this comedic tool has served societies as far back as the Egyptians and the pyramids. The point being, speaking truth to power, it's not a modern world invention. Professor Al Genie back with us tonight. He's a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago and the recent author of The Importance of Being Funny, Why We Need More Jokes in Our Lives, our resident philosopher, Al Genie. Happy New Year. Good to
Wonderful
see you,
Wonderful to see you again. It's hard to believe it's 2018. Can I tell my yearly January 1st story? In 1949, I was in first grade, and the good nuns were teaching us, and even though we couldn't read and write, they taught us to block out our names, so every paper had to put Alfred R. Genie, then JMJ. Those of you who are not Catholic, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph in capital letters, and then the date. So, September 28th, 1949. So, anyway, so the school year, Christmas comes up. We come back. It's in January, and now it's 1950. But I could not wrap my head around the concept. So I put down January 4th, 1949 +1, and the nun beat the hell out of me for being impudent. How I ever became a teacher, I don't know.
You learned that's the first lesson.
And that's not a joke, but that is sarcasm about the nuns. And that's a good way to begin.
It's a good way to begin.
Let's talk.
Let's talk about that. You know, because I've always been someone who's done political satire, and I've always had a problem with how to categorize comedy.
Yeah.
Because there are jokes, there's satire, there's political satire, there's sarcasm. Talk about the differences between these categories.
And I think there is real difference. I think when you talk about joke telling, we're talking about entertainment. It's called show business. And, you know, even before you started to think about comedy, there were people who came out there and told jokes. Good morning. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Did you hear the one about? They came out there, the Myron Cohens of the world, you know, the Jackie Gleasons of the world, these stand-up comics. By the way, stand-up comedy invented in this country by comedians. Jerry Lewis was not a stand-up comic, for example. We think of him as a great comedian, but he was not a stand-up comic. But we're talking about a show business. They had tuxedos on. They told lovely stories. They went from story to story to story to story, and it was charming, and you paid so much dollars, et cetera, et cetera. They're joke tellers. They're out there. Maybe they said something profound indirectly, but the real attempt is to make us laugh.
Yeah.
It was a diversion. It was lovely. Now, sarcasm is something different. Sarcasm is something used in our lives all the time. Something ironic or bitter or caustic that we say about somebody. Something that's, you know, cutting or a put down.
The eye roll.
Yeah. to irate you. It's like one of my favorite comments is, I like being single. This way you can pick out the woman who abuses you. You can regularly pick out the woman who abuses you. Something, you know, something that's really snarky. But and so that's really sarcasm. But to me, the real issue, satire is an entirely different thing. It's comedy with an edge. comedy that is more than just being comedic. It's making a comment about society or politics. You know, Robin Williams once said that the purpose of satire is to show that the Pope can farts as well. But that's only a little piece of it. That's, you know, kind of,
yeah.
I think in some sense, satire is this attempt to expose, to critique, to unveil, to disassemble something in society and to make fun of it, to look at it in another way. The Greek word, it means to tear one's flesh, to bite one's lip in anger about something. And so I think satire is poking fun at things, to examine them, to disassemble them, to kind of be iconoclastic, to deconstruct it, to detox it, to look at for what it really is. So when he was talking about, when Robin Williams went to prove that the folk purposes, the Pope farts as well, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, I just got off a plane and it sounds like it right now.
No, it's good.
But the reality is, I think satire is an attempt to not just tell the jokes, but to preach, to rant, to examine, to look at the underpinnings, if you will, where there is a similarity between comedy, just straight entertainment, and satire is that comics and satirists are canaries in the coal mine. They are bespeaking something that's going on. They're bringing something to our attention.
I love this topic because satire, when you talk about comedy with an edge, it's not just satirists that do it, meaning it's become a format. And you've had so many, I think that's part of the reasons that it falls into partisan politics, is because there's a lot of comics who didn't necessarily, weren't comics with an edge, that have found a niche in making fun of Trump or making fun of whatever. And they just go, I think of late night talk shows. But then there are people that you believe have an axe to grind, or that they're angry, or that they have the edge. And I think of people like Stephen Colbert, who approved it, and you feel that organic nature when he's doing the Colbert Report and he's making fun of Bill O'Reilly. And then you see in what he does every night on The Late Show, where you feel that he wants to say something about Trump. This is his duty, and it's part of who he is. He's not just faking it.
But this is the new, I mean, let's distinguish American political satire in different ways. This is the new satire. I think if we want to look at the icons of satire in America, we have to look at Mark Twain. I think we have to look at the singing cowboy, I'm sorry, the philosophical cowboy, and I'm blanking on his name right now. You're going to think of it for me.
No,
right?
I know.
Will Rogers, there we go. Will Rogers, I'm sorry, and Mort Saul. And in some sense, Mark Twain, as Hemingway said, without Mark Twain, there would be no literature in America, there would be no literary commentary in America. Mark Twain uses pulpit as a novelist and as an essayist to make comments about reality. He says, ladies and gentlemen, let's pretend this is a society of rational people and that things really work well. Oh, we can't do that. There is a Congress. Boom. He made comments about society. He used his comedy to analyze, to dissect, to take apart issues. And he did it very consciously. And as a later performer in the world, he did it in a way that stepped away from his literature, that he went around and gave talks.
Yeah.
And that it became, in some sense, America's first stand-up. And then Will Rogers comes along in the 30s. People are falling apart. He comes out there. He says, you know, the only thing I know is what I read in the papers every day. And then made comments about this. He started off as a cowboy rodeo star. Went into burlesque. Did Ziegfeld Follies. And then,
which is why you could see the success of Will Rogers, or a success of Mark Twain, or anywhere along the line. You can understand why it has been compartmentalized and made into a format.
Right, right.
That's a form. I mean, I think of the early days of even The Tonight Show or some of the people. That's where the daily monologue comes from.
Right, the daily monologue came from. In fact, you know, the wonderful thing about those shows before, let's say, everything changes with Bill Murray. Bill Maher and the show at night. Excuse me, I'm having a really hard time.
Politically incorrect.
Politically incorrect stuff.
The show he had on Comedy Central that went to.
And it all starts with them. Things begin to change, and then these satirists, including John
Stewart,
begins to change the nature of what we mean by political commentary and what we mean by satire. And they created that. It wasn't fake news. It was fake commentary. And that's different from what was happening with Mort Saul, who's really the transitional figure. Mort Saul comes in and walks out on stage looking like a college
professor. He's himself, right.
He's himself with the New York Times under his...
He's got something to say. He's going to be poetic by saying it.
And he's going to say this. So he started to do stand-up but with a purpose. You know, right. One of his classic lines is, "Of course I believe in execution. If you don't kill people, how are they ever going to learn?" And he did that kind of stuff.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But he then became very, very political and only political. By the way, he's 93 and he still performs one night a week in California doing that kind of stuff. But real satire, as we know it now, has evolved in the last 25 years.
Do you think that that's good or bad? That's what I'm trying to get, because I listened to Stephen Colbert. Like, Roe was playing some stuff in the top five at five about his, which was a really funny joke, where the president said he's going to have the fake news awards
right.
coming up, which I think is hilarious. That's a whole other thing, where what happens when the satire is coming from the source.
Right.
But you know, he says, and Stephen Colbert's response was, "For your consideration." He put up billboards in Times Square that were mocking the idea of what people do to get a Golden
right.
Globe or an Emmy or an Oscar.
Right.
And the categories are really funny. And I was like, that's a really, regardless of politics,
right.
that to me is baseline eat your vegetables satire, political
right.
satire.
And
he nailed it.
And social satire as well. Now, you got to remember, you started to say the night shows, Johnny Carson and so forth.
Yeah.
They told a political joke or two. Even Saturday Night Live, they always did something that was political, but it was a one-off.
Not a
political show. Yes, since day one, they had one of the characters making fun of the president, right? So
right.
who started off doing Jerry Ford. Chevy Chase,
yeah.
all the way down now to an award-winning, you know, yeah. Trump. But satire began to become totally political with Jon Stewart and Bill Maher.
Al Jeaney, my guest, the resident philosopher here for The Download. We're talking about the history of political satire, how it's changed over the years. And when we come back, let's talk about the history going back, because we just talked about American political satire. But what I find to be fascinating is that this form, before Mark Twain didn't invent it, it has moved from generation to generation, from ancestors to ancestors. You can date it all the way back to the jesters and dynasties, and of course, the pyramids and the Egyptians. So we'll talk more about political satire with a resident philosopher, Professor Al Jeaney, here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. My guest in studio for the 8 o'clock hour at the big table, Professor Al Jeaney, our resident philosopher and the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago, and the author of the new book, The Importance of Being Funny, Why We Need More Jokes in Our Lives. Tonight, we do this with you from time to time, where we just kind of bring it down to once a month, it feels
like.
Yeah,
at least a month.
But we talk about the bigger picture things and kind of get into what's happening. And I feel like political satire is a great place to be and to talk about and to explore and be philosophical about, because it almost feels like, and we see it from this president, that if you speak out in this way, it's
right.
it's shame or it's treason or it's unpatriotic. And we've seen this. And in your work and in the book and other places, you see that this is something that even some of the big, powerful people in human history have desired to be next to them.
Desire to be next to it, but I think you have to remember something here. This president, whatever your political background here, I'm trying to be as objective as possible. This president is simply a magnet for satirical analysis. Come on. His demeanor, his verbiage, his style, everything about him in some sense is drawing attention. Now, anybody in that office, and I've been spending this last couple of years reading every presidential biography of every president, which is absolutely fascinating. Everyone in that office is reviled, made fun of. You can see the whole history of it. You don't think Washington was loved, but they still made fun of him. Jefferson, they made look like a buffoon. They always had him in slippers someplace because he was trying to become. What they did to poor Mr. Lincoln is beyond comprehension. Drawing him as a gorilla. Literally drawing the old Sun-Times, the predecessor of the Sun-Times, the guy called him, you know, so many stupid things, it was beyond comprehension. So that was also vicious. But I think Mr. Trump has generated, has created an engine that has generated more satire than before, simply because he's so audacious. He's so irreverent. He's so unusual. His methodology and demeanor just asks for that
and
kind of
political
analysis.
Satirists love thin-skinned politicians.
Absolutely.
And this is one who he likes to push back,
right.
he likes to fight
right.
back, and it gives more
of
fuel
course.
To the comedians.
I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we off mic, we're talking about Mr. Obama. Well, Mr. Obama didn't fight back. Mr. Obama joined
right.
the crowd. Mr. Obama, to my interpretation is, he understood the power of humor. When he went out to California to be with Marin, when he took some, with the Fern Room, et cetera, so these smaller shows, these podcasts,
oh, yeah.
he knew exactly what he was doing. First of all, he understood the media. He understood that this wonderful electronic system that we have in front of us has all kinds of other opportunities besides WGN and the major station. So he knew how to get to the younger people. I find it fascinating that my daughter's generation listens to me on this show, but not while we're on. Later they pick it up later in a different way. So he understood that, and he wanted to get out there and give a message. But that meant
But I was just going to say, Al, this is not a segment about the legacy of President Obama. No. It's a segment about political satire.
Right.
And I would make an argument, and it's not a popular one, that the political satirist fell down on the job with President Obama. As you talked about, I mean, some of the more legendary presidents of our time, Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, they were, you know, they had the same kind of press and cartoons and other things about them, and that were, they were making fun of the power. But Obama, and maybe it was the first African-American president, whatever it might be, he was a liberal, and most of the comics seemed to be coming from a liberal bend.
Yeah.
There seemed to be more satire that was done about Washington or about the issues of the day,
agree.
And less about the
but
president.
But I think he disarmed them by playing with them. And
it's
He started telling jokes. He's very, very savvy. So I think that, but there's a long history here, you're quite right, of satire. You know, going back, Jonathan Swift, of course, in the English tradition, this brilliant, you know, when he said, you know, when their great genius appears, the world will know, you will know them by the sign that the Confederacy of Dunces will gather around them. This notion of using language to disarm and to kind of dissect something. One of my favorite quotes is the Clarence Darrow quote, when I was a boy, I was told anyone could become president, and now I'm beginning to believe it. He's talking about Harding and so on and so forth. And it's absolutely true, these wonderful statements. But you got to remember what it's about. I know in the book I tried to write a funny line that I'm sure that comedy and satire probably started at the same time. So when some unknown Egyptian made a joke about the changing depth of the Nile and the peculiar shape of the pyramids, they then took a cheap shot at the Pharaoh's mummy. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
But there is something to be said that, this is the whole concept of the jester.
Right.
And the concept in human history of how political satire has played out. It has always been pretty close and a tool that's been used by the populace to take truth to power.
And in every society, a wonderful book by Beatrice Otto called the Jesters, a beautiful book that every society, not just Europe, not just the English court, had jesters that had the power to speak truth to power, but only as jesters. Only in, you know, why do they wear uniforms? Because it was a job. You had to know it. You had to be within that. You had to do this role. They also knew that they had to do it in a funny way. They couldn't just say, Your Majesty, let me critique your last three proposals, so on and so forth. But rather, he had to do it with a joke involved, so on and so forth. And by the way, because there are very few women, even the Cheyennes had contraries that were allowed to say that. And it's a release valve in a society. I think satirists, I think comics
are the contraries.
Are the contraries that allow us to examine issues and disrobe issues and be vicious about issues without going to war about it. But it forces an analysis of that. Even a cruel Trump joke. There's so many Trump jokes, it's not worth doing. This whole industry has been created by that because, as Lewis Black has said, who's been a satirist for 35 years and made fun of everybody, including the people he loved, including Mr. Obama, love Mr. Obama, but I've seen him do 3 hours on ripping him apart satirically. There's a whole industry created right now. Why are these people, the five major shows now at night, are all talking about Trump? Why? Because he's offering, as Lewis Black said, it's almost not being fun being a comic anymore because I don't have to write. I just have to read the paper. have to get up and say, well, what's happened today? But what they're really doing is using the real world as a place to examine the ideal world or the better world.
You know, you mentioned with Lincoln.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of physical jokes that were made about that became the thing. And I think about Ronald Reagan as another example. The Saturday Night Live did the piece with, I think it was Phil Hartman, who would act like he was dumb. And then when they closed the door, he was like on it. George W. Bush got Saturday Night Live and everyone in between just portrayed him as a buffoon. Bill Clinton, to a certain extent, got the same thing about with satirists making fun of him. And in Trump, you see the same thing again. The danger, and I'm going to talk about this
but
after the news as well.
Different.
But the danger in Trump's hair is funny. I can't believe the funny things he says or the way he acts, or is that you're not paying attention to the actual job of being truth to power. You're not talking about the things that might be the policies that are changing in this country or the way that we live or things that might be unfair, because satirists are spending too much time messing around with the superficial.
What do you mean by a satirist? I think there are superficial satirists and serious systemic satirists who are trying to make Mortzall is really trying to make
I'm just talking about the contraries. Yeah, Mortzall is a contrary.
He's a real contrary.
Right.
But, you know, these cheap shots, cheap jokes are still satire, so you have to be the judge. Come on, you've been in the comic business for a long time. There are good comics and bad comics. I mean, how do you evaluate them? But I really think what we're talking about here is satire is about critique. But remember, critique isn't always put down. Critique is about taking something apart, examining it, so maybe you can put it back together again. I think the Jonathan Swifts of the world are trying to correct the world, not simply comment on the world.
You know, we'll take a break here because I want to get to tonight's news, but a great picking up point coming up after Rob's news. You're seeing more and more, and I think this is where this fake news concept comes from. This is where you get a groundswell of people that are upset with a liberal agenda, if you will, and being contrary, is this idea that, I don't know, that we're not necessarily, I'm trying to think the best way to say this, I'm running out of time, but I want to get to the idea that we maybe... satire has changed, as you mentioned, with Colbert and everything that's happening, to a point that we're no longer the satire and the actual points that we're going after are not the right things. They're not that CNN or MSNBC or NBC, they're using satire when they shouldn't be.
It's not enough to make fun of his hair. That real satire is making fun of his
policy.
But
my point being that like we're seeing more and more news organizations using satire, rolling their eyes, doing things that have been done for the comics in uniform.
Right.
As you talked about, the jesters were in uniform. You knew they were the jesters. Now it's getting all discombobulated on Twitter and social media and other places where you're not sure, why is the anchor that is telling me the news is also rolling his eyes at what's being said? That's the part I want to get to.
Okay.
We come back. Al Jeaney, our resident philosopher and the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at the University of Loyola Chicago. We'll talk more about political satire coming up here on The Download. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's Download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, our resident philosopher, Al Jeaney. He's a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago. He's also the author of The Importance of Being Funny, Why We Need More Jokes in Our Lives. And we're talking about funny tonight. We're talking about political satire. Well, an area of comedy that we have seen explode in ways that I don't know if we would have thought in starting 2018 because of the Trump administration. But we have seen a backlash, if you will. A lot of people who might be conservative, who are sick and tired of mainstream talk shows and other places continuing to make these jokes about their president or president. They feel like, I get this a lot on the show when we start to debate about President Trump. They say, hey, have respect for the
office.
But
again,
like
I want to point out to you that the reason there's so many jokes about this is because the man engenders it. And I think we're forgetting something really basic. Satire, again, is not just regular comedy. You know, the priest, a rabbi, and a monk walk into a bar, and the bartender says, hey, is this a joke? Boom, ba boom, boom. That's pretty good. But satire is kind of a caustic, a comic criticism of the cosmos. And I think real satirists, like on The Onion, for example, serious satirists are trying to criticize by ripping apart something, going back to the Greek etymology of the word, to really disembowel it to understand it. Now, not necessarily to destroy it, but to understand it. Now, we've talked about this before. I think one of the things that comedy does for us is it disarms, it lets us cope better, it lets us tolerate things better, gives us a reprieve from it. But satire says, no, let's look at this right in the face. And the best example of that is the Bill Maher show. I think Bill Maher, 25 years on the air, and Jon Stewart changed comedy, as I said before, changed satire, as I said before. But Maher's show now, to me, is amazing. He gets up there, he rants, he raves, he shows all of his own personal political predilections. He makes fun of everyone there. The panel he puts up there of other geniuses, he puts down, so on and so forth. He's out there to make a point. People, 4.5 million people watch that show every week. They want to hear that. He is being a funny analyst of society. And I think that's what satire really is. And what now what we have is, yes, I think in some sense, Stephen Courbet, who came out of, think of the tree that comes out of Jon Stewart's shows, when he played before the conservative, the Colbert show, he was actually playing the conservative, but in the irony was he was playing the conservative to make another point. Now he's the pope of liberalism there, the closer to his own political points of view, because he can be. Why does he keep doing it every night? Because it's there. It's comic fodder. How can you not?
And people seem to want it.
And people seem, it's the release valve.
Okay, but here's a question. I don't know if we have the answer here, but I do see with the naked eye that the political satirists of our time, the ones that you just mentioned, Bill Maher, Stephen Colbert, Jon Stewart, they all have a liberal bent.
Yep.
Even when Obama was president, and I'll give Jon Stewart credit because I think that he did go after Obama enough on that show, but a lot of times it was about Congress, it was about John Boehner, it was about the Republican Senate. There are a lot of different things. But it always seems to fall, political satire, at least in entertainment in Hollywood and places that are on television and other parts of media, right, seem to come from a liberal place. Why is that? I don't understand why there isn't a fleet of conservative comics that are also being trotted out on a Tuesday night at 10:30.
Well, there's not a fleet of them. There certainly are enough out there if you go to enough of those small clubs. And we're talking about off mic the gentleman before from Saturday Night Live.
Dennis Miller. That's not a comparison. That's a 1990 comparison.
Well, you know what? But you know why he's not successful? Because he's not that funny. Because he's got fewer targets. I think you have to talk about targets. These fools that worked in courts died unless there was something to make fun of. Now, they made fun of Milady's hairstyle today or something like that. That was irrelevant. They were supposed to make fun of real issues. Like it or not, this guy is a whirlwind of material for anyone. Who do you talk about?
I agree wholeheartedly. It's easy, and it's also important to truth to power to this current administration. But I would make the argument that the candidate that he beat, Hillary Clinton,
is
someone that you will go onto social media, and if you find yourself in conservative circles, there are a lot of memes, a lot of jokes, a lot of things going on. So I just don't understand why that hasn't bubbled up to the mainstream. That's my point.
Well, because we're actually tired of it. She's not as funny as he is, in some sense, she's being ripped apart by Democrats.
And SNL
so on and so forth. But the conservatives are doing that as well, and she's got a lot there. I mean, there's a lot, as Churchill said, there's a lot less there than meets the eye, and therefore she can be taken apart. But when you've got this outrageous character standing in the middle of the room, how do you not do it? That's still the job. And they haven't run out of materials.
Yeah.
I mean, if he would, for example, this is his genius in some sense. He starts twittering. If he twitters out on a given morning, Tweedledee, Tweedledum, the headline in the New York Times is, Tweedledee, Tweedledum, what does the president mean by that, right? He controls the media. Well, his persona controls your comic fodder.
Let me ask this, and this is something that, you know, is just kind of curious about this. Is Donald Trump, not the president, but the man, is he a political satirist? In the way that he would go in these campaign rallies and places with thousands of people in the room, and he would make jokes about the health care, and he'd make jokes about Obama, and he would do truth to power, and people get riled up, and it would be taken out by the news organizations, say, can you believe he said this? But he is making jokes.
Not only did he make comments like that, and you know this, for 5 years before he ran for the presidency, he was on all the major comedy shows
and
doing bits on his own show. This is the first television persona that's become president of the United States.
But I mean, but I think that he does political satire.
Satire is not, it's not only held by Stephen Courbet. Satire is when, again, you analyze, take something apart, make fun of, belittle, to try to understand it or try to destroy it. Now,
I love you. I love you, Al. I love when you're like Stephen Courbet.
Did I say Courbet?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I just love it. I love it.
But I mispronounce so many words.
I know, it's not a big deal. I just think it's like, Courbet. But I wonder about it. I just wonder about, as as we continue as news organizations to cover the president in certain ways, and it continues to take this tone of, I can't believe he said that. I mean, even yesterday, and I know that he's not, I mean, this is the strange part of our world right now, that jesters and political satirists' job is to get truth to power. But what happens when the jester and the political satirist becomes the power? Because the tweet on Kim Jong-un, where he says, I too have a nuclear button, and it's bigger and it's more powerful and mine works. That's a comment. That's political satire.
That's right.
He just did it in form. So I guess that's what I think why our heads are exploding.
No, or as a satirist might say, or utter stupidity and juvenilia. And so you make
maybe he's bad at it, but the point being,
right.
He's
no,
trying.
No, I agree with you. But I think, you know, I'm going to go all the way back to Will Rogers when he said, most people are actors on stage. They have writers. Bob Hope. You know, when we talk about show business, Bob Hope never created a joke in his life. He had drawers and drawers and drawers of jokes. He had 20 people writing for him constantly, and he just got up there and he delivered, right? Roger says, I just get up there and I get the material from Congress. All I have to do is look at the political page.
Right.
And so I think what's happening, there's nothing new here. He's just the 600-pound gorilla in charge. Yeah. I don't think satire has been ruined by him. I don't think satire is only about him, but he's unavoidable. Come on. If you were working Zanies right now for a living and going around, how do you not use some of that material? How
well, I just wonder, there's danger in it in
there
the sense that, that he becomes both. He becomes the power and speaks to power, and then the actual political satirists lose their voice in the sense that they don't know exactly where to plant their flag.
And yet, I want to make this is the important point I think we should make right now. Peter Sagal, our friend Peter Sagal.
Celebrated 20 years.
Just celebrated that. And interesting, it's a real news show that makes fun of that makes fun of others. I think it's fascinating when he talks about that. The new media gets it. That, you know, one out of five people under 35 get all their information from these shows. And they get it, that there's a double entendre happening right now. I think I pronounced that correctly, by the way, but you might want to check your fucking wagon on it.
Right. I know.
There's a double entendre going on right now. They get that there's a comic bit going on, but at the same time, that comic bit is taking on all these little facts, okay? So they can distinguish between, here's the joke, and here's the facts.
Yeah.
Well, now they're doing these studies. These people are better informed than NPR listeners, CNN listeners, and Fox listeners, because they're making a distinction. Now, the new chap, the Pakistani young man, whose name I'm
Aziz Ansari.
Yes.
Or commit.
No,
yeah.
No. Yes.
Aziz Ansari is an Indian.
Hassan
Minaj.
Minaj. Yeah. He's Pakistani. I thought he's Pakistani.
Yeah.
And he said it. He says, this is the new media now. He says, these shows, which I thought I was just being a comic on, I realize I'm dispensing information. And this is the current equivalent of journalism.
But I just find that to be dangerous.
It is dangerous when you don't get enough correct facts.
What's more important? I guess the point is when Hassan Minaj, who's been on this program and a great comic, and he has that to say, and I think he's correct in saying so. But the danger is, hey, you know, at a certain point, people are going to say that that's what I learned my information from, or that's what I gleaned from this world by what the
judge.
And the question I have from when you talk about from an editorial standpoint is what's more important to The Daily Show? What's more important, the facts or the joke?
Yeah, that's really a tough one. And listen, as a professor, when somebody says, where'd you get that fact? Oh, Wikipedia. Great. Thank you. It doesn't work. Or for my generation, it was the Monarch Notes. You know, I didn't read the book.
Cliff Notes,
which, by the way, used to be wonderful, but now, you know.
You can't do that anymore. The internet ruined Cliff Notes.
Well, I think that the reality is that you got to make a distinction between those two. I think that what Jon Stewart did, and it was brilliant, as Oliver points out, it says, this is not fake news. This is real news that I'm dissecting and making fun of and belittling.
Right.
In fact, it's a little difficult to watch the Oliver show. He's so professorial. He's so a machine gun in his analysis that, boy, you have to really pay attention. But in that critique is both humor and wisdom, and it's profound.
When you talk about the names that you're throwing around, John Oliver, Stephen Colbert, Hassan Minaj, and down the line, are we living in a golden age of political satire?
Yeah,
text in saying, what about George Carlin?
Right.
That was social and political satire.
Social, political.
You think of the late 60s, you think of all those great comedians, think of Saturday Night Live in the mid-70s.
Absolutely.
But are we right now, living in what you would call the golden age of political satire.
And you know, if I was going to add one other person to that that triumph, I would put George Carlin right in there, because he did both. In fact, he did social commentary and then political commentary, and he got better and better and better. And interestingly enough, he started off in a tuxedo telling jokes on stage, right, and moved all the way across the board to this, in the end, you know, this great comic. I do think we are in a golden age. I mean, let's not forget Samantha Bee is another graduate of that show. And so we've created this new engine of productivity. By the way, Jon Stewart, they loved him and they praised him. I'm sure you saw the end of the show, too. He was also draconian with them. He worked them to death. One of the reasons he quit is he couldn't take his own pace. He couldn't take the workload after 16 years. Do you see how he looks right now? Either he's taking the worst possible drugs or that man is really worked
out. All right, well, let me bring back the point I made right before we went to the news, that one of the issues that seems to be an outgrowth of what's happening with political satire is that people recognize it's popular.
Yeah.
And in doing so, whether you're at organizations like CNN or NBC or CBS or ABC or Fox down the line, they're finding ways to incorporate that.
Right.
And when that could be through an eye roll, it could be through joking with other panelists on the and finding ways to make it less about news and more about analyzing the news, and in sense having political satire. And that seems to be the outgrowth of where this quote hashtag fake news outgrowth comes from. Is that not happened before? I mean, is this a new phenomenon?
No, this is a coming together of three things. The number of comics out there, the media that's changed, and so many
different platforms have changed,
so many outfits, and the players. Eisenhower jokes were about golf. Or the Eisenhower dollars, you wound it up and it walked in the corner and did nothing. I remember that joke, you know. and the Kennedy jokes, you know, and so on and so forth. You know, there was a comic who, I can't think of his name right now, he did the Kennedy album, and he never did any other thing. He sold millions and millions of copies of the albums. Every president has had their critique. And Will Rogers made fun of FDR like crazy. FDR invited him to the White House regularly to talk about some of these things because he felt Will Rogers had captured the tempo. So it's the performers, it is the medium, and it is the issues involved. And right now, the glorious issue, like it or not, is this president nobody really expected to win.
Yeah. I had a friend of mine, Mike, who I really like as a comedian, and he is conservative. And you don't see it in the circles that you run, stand-up comedians in Chicago. You don't see. And he always alienates on Facebook, and people are always like, I can't believe they don't even have an ad. They just get mad at him. He's almost a rabble-rouser. But he's a political satirist, and he's funny, but he's definitely pro-Trump. And his pro-Trump approach is, this is the funniest president we've ever had.
Right.
And he even made a joke yesterday on Facebook that was essentially talking about the corrupt media awards and that Trump wants to. He goes, I can't believe all the irate stand-up friends of mine that don't see the value of this joke. It's a funny joke that he is doing that, and that people get mad about that. But it is true. When I think about it, I'm like, as a comic, I'm like, yeah, it is funny that the president would say, I'm going to do an award show on Monday to give out trophies for the stuff that I don't like.
I understand that, but remember, all of comedy is always in the context of the comedy. And would we like Stephen, what is his name again? Stephen
Colbert.
Stephen Colbert. When he played the other role before, did we think he was funny when he was really playing that role? Did we think it was funny playing the role? Do we really like his character as the anal retentive conservative, or do we like him playing the anal retentive conservative in order to understand the opposite of that? Yeah. So I think you got to remember that comedy and politics are by nature connected to each other. And you know, it's whose ox you're goring. And what are the three rules of, by the way, what are the three rules of comedy? Audience.
location.
Right. He was going to say that. So who else are you telling these jokes to? By the way, conservatives aren't turning that on.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, people watching those great ratings is because of people who want to hear that. So I think we have this great coming together. But remember, the whole purpose of satire is to rip apart, to take apart, to deconstruct, to analyze, but not always to destroy, to make better.
Great convo. Al Jeany, our resident philosopher here on The Download, who's also the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago. He is also the author of The Importance of Being Funny, Why We Need More Jokes in Our Lives. We'll be back next month. What do you want to talk about next?
I will take elocution lessons in order to improve my diction and pronunciation. We're going to talk about next week. How about 27 Rules for Totalitarianism?
I'm in, man. Okay. I just clearly...